This time together, we're going to be exploring marjoram in relationship to denial and defensiveness. And wow, what help we need in both of those realms at the moment. So let me start with first describing what defensiveness is and denial is from the perspective of energy. Because we all have ideas about what denial is, what it looks like, whether we have it or don't, what it feels like when we're in the face of it. We all have story around it, same with defensiveness. And we have many, many layers of connotations that spin off of these words. It's words like those that become all the more important to go really slow with and to first look at from the perspective of energy. And if we can understand and feel both in our body, in our emotional body, and in our mental body, if we can really feel in an integrated way the energetics behind these words, then we actually experience a great degree of empowerment in working with them. And I'll unpack why that is that we experience this empowerment, because it's very important, and I don't want you to just take my word for it. You know, I hope that it's something that you explore on your own, and then you decide for yourself whether or not that's part of the experience of thinking and working in this way in terms of energetics. So let's look at denial first, actually. Denial is a walling off or a shielding off from some aspect of what's arising. From that perspective, we could say that we're always living in some degree of denial because of the nature of being human and having limited perspective with our human eyes. With our spiritual eyes, it's very different, and we've all had the experience of being in denial about something and then having it lifted to the level of spirit and soul and being able to see with a much bigger perspective and being not only liberated from the denial, but being liberated from a tremendous amount of unnecessary suffering. So denial, again, energetically, is when there is something that's walled off from something else. So I'll take an example, a prime example, and I often, as I know if you've been with listening to me for a little while, you'll hear me tell personal stories, and I don't tell them in an indulgent way, meaning I'm not telling them just to tell them, I'm telling them because my hopes is that they convey a big piece of what it is that I'm trying to share. Because the main way that we learn is through story. You know, we can relate to stories, whereas facts, it's easy to kind of dry facts or logical tidbits are easy to create distance with. So in my experience of my life, I think one of the largest ongoing realities of denial that I experienced was around my own relationship to alcohol. And I lived many, many years drinking in a way that was, at least in terms of the social circles I ran in, was very socially acceptable. And I was often, when I would go out with friends, the designated driver. And so I had a story about how I really didn't have a problem with alcohol because of what I just mentioned to you and some other pieces. I had a job, I went to school, I was in a relationship, so surely I didn't have a problem. And yet, I would find myself drinking when I didn't want to be drinking. I would find myself promising myself yet again that I wouldn't drink the next day. And yet again, the next day, the evening would come around and I would open up that bottle of wine. And so in order to keep that cycle going, there was a kind of division within myself of that which I would allow myself to see or acknowledge, and that which I wouldn't allow myself to see and acknowledge. And when we have the allowed parts and the disallowed parts, part of what happens is that we then create a kind of space. It's almost like a rip, excuse me, in the fabric of reality. It's a kind of space that opens where then we insert a story, something that we want to believe, something that we want others to believe. Because remember, within denial, you have, so take my example, there's the part that I'm allowing to be true, okay, the part that I'm allowing to be true, how much I say how much I drink, how often I drink, I'm allowing a certain amount of that to be to be professed, let's say. And then I have all of this other aspect that I'm putting into this dark cupboard and locking a lock and throwing away the key, in a sense. And then I have this space that opens up because I have now cut off part of the truth. And so there's something else that comes in to fill that place of the truth. I hope this is making sense. Something else comes in to fill that void because I've now created a void. And so that what comes in to fill the void is the story that we tell. It's the story that we tell ourselves. It's the story that we tell other people. It's the story that our body acts out, that our mind acts out, that our emotions act out. And so the mechanisms of denial on an energetic level have to do with division, the putting of certain material in hiding, the allowing of partial material, because we're not allowing for it all to be there, the allowing of partial material to show to the conscious mind and for others to see. And then we have this third piece that is part of, we could even say, delusional material. It's fabricated material, fantasized material, if you will. And so those are the sort of three-pronged dynamic, energy dynamic of denial. Now, kind of let that, hold that in one hand, if you will, and now in the other hand, we're going to hold, what are the dynamics, we'll ask the question and then hold, what are the dynamics, what are the energy dynamics that help denial to stay in place? Because there's denial itself, as we just described. And then there is all of this interesting energy movement in relationship to denial that both continues to give rise to it and that also helps hold it in place. So, let's continue with the example of from my own experience with drinking and having the denial around how much I was drinking and how often I was drinking, then having the aspect of what was happening, not just practically, but also emotionally and mentally, that I was had it locked away. And then I have the fabricated material. So I want you to just feel into the energy of each of those. So we have that which is allowed to stream through. And so there's, if you can imagine the energy of it, it's that you have, it's almost like a dam, like a selective dam, where you have some energy moving through, but then all of these other mechanisms that keep different places in that energy flow dampened down. And then you have that which is behind the dam, pushing forward on it, but contained within something. And then you have that which is sort of flowering into the scene, that is the story that we tell. We tell ourselves, we tell other people. And there's a kind of emphasis, movement of energy up and out on that material. In a way, if you think about when a magician works, or a con artist for that matter, where there is a sleight of hand, what happens is there's what you can see, there's what you can't see, and then there's what they want you to see. And there's a lot of emphasis placed on what they want you to see so that you don't see what they don't want you to see. And it's a similar thing that we do within ourselves and we do amongst ourselves, etc. So now, what are the dynamics that help hold that in place and continue to give rise to it? One is a phrase that probably you know, and that's called codependency. So it's when we take, I'm a little bit oversimplifying here, but when we make somebody else's issue or somebody else's emotional experience all our responsibility. I think, again, this is one we all know well. I know for my husband, most of the time, he's a very heartful, joyous man to be around. And when he has a bad day and a grouchy day, it's like the opposite. It can be really intense to be around because it's very much like a dark cloud. And so when that happens, my first inclination is that I need to change that somehow for him. I need to make him better. I need to help make him happy. So to the degree that I unconsciously and consciously try to change his experience from an overextension of myself, that would be the energy of codependency, or an aspect of the energy of codependency. And that helps the denial structures to stay in place, because then the person can't face and deal with their own self and what's happening for them, because somebody else is trying to take it away, make it better, distract them from it, etc. So codependency is one. Another dynamic, energy dynamic, that helps denial stay in place is bullying. So we can think of so many examples of this in history, of course, of people being bullied into denying their truth of religion, their truth of belief. I think of many stories in history of people being bullied into denying their truth of love for one another. For example, marrying out of the caste system, or falling in love out of the caste system or class system. So bullying is when you have one energy that's dominating over another. And when one energy is dominating over another, it can force energies into denial. And when we force energies into denial, we then have the other two prongs of the denial stool that I was previously describing. Speaking generally, and this is a big one, but fear, the energy of fear, keeps denial in place. And this could be fear of being shunned, fear of being cast out, fear of being hurt, fear of being unwanted, unloved, uncared for. All of those fears can, of course, force certain things or push certain things in the direction of denial. And then we get good at continuing to hold those denial pieces in place. The last two that I want to mention are guilt and shame. And by the way, I don't necessarily claim that this is an exhaustive list of what keeps denial in place. This has been an ongoing inquiry for me, a deep contemplation for some time now, particularly growing much deeper in this contemplation in the last year and at this particular time that I'm recording this with our current president, and all of the blatant denial that we see in front of us on a very frequent basis, and just asking the questions and staying with the questions of how does this, what does this look like, not just, you know, blatantly in front of us in another person, but what does this look like within me? What does this look like within my family? What does this look like within our communities? Because clearly for it to be so blatant at a high level, it has to also exist within, we could say, at a micro level and a macro level. And it is my belief and my deep sense that we are at a particular time in history when we have the opportunity to allow so much that has been denied and repressed to more safely than ever, I'm not saying it's always safe, but more safely than ever, come up to the surface with newly arising tools to be able to cope with it, not just from a place of an individual, but from the place of community. Now, I feel like we're barely just peeking into this. We have much work and attentiveness and love to give to this project, if you will. But again, that's part of what the oils are here to help us with, and why I think marjoram is particularly helpful, as we will loop to in the end, if you can stay with me here. So looking at guilt and shame, shame is a powerful force that will keep things in denial pockets, that will keep delusions and fantasies active, that will keep us only acknowledging partial truths. And the energy of shame is this sort of self-looping, almost self-feeding, heavy, boggy energy that often plays itself out down in the lower part of the body, in the pelvic area, in the sacral area, sometimes in the solar plexus area. And instead of the energy being able to move and then rise up and then go back down again and move in the many directions that it's meant to, it keeps sort of looping in on itself and creates, on a physical level, what it does is create heaviness of fluids. It bogs down the lymphatic system. It creates what we refer to in Chinese medicine as dampness. And then this physiological state makes it harder and harder for the damp, for the shame to transform. But shame itself, again, if you can think in your own experience right now of something that you've been ashamed of, and how because of that shame you would acknowledge only part of a truth, create a counterpart to the missing part of the truth, and then tuck away the denied or repressed aspect of the truth. And at some point, it's very, very important for this material to be able to surface and have the light of acknowledgement simply shown, simply shining down upon it, so that it may be transformed and transmuted. Shame and also guilt are some of the primary backdrops of cultural and individual alienation, isolation, separation. And that alienation, isolation, separation, that forms the very terrain, the very backdrop that gives rise to addiction, any number of addictions that we experience. Because in addiction, we're attempting at wholeness, but we're doing it from this place of alienation, separation, isolation, from a place of lack, from a place of denial, from a place of repression, from a place of fabrication, from a place of unhealthy fantasy. Now, when we look at the energetics of guilt, guilt can also be very heavy energetically, as you've probably experienced. It certainly can be all-encompassing and all-engrossing. And there's also an aspect of guilt that you may have experienced yourself that tends to kind of settle in the area of the lungs, in the area of the chest. Sometimes you'll feel it kind of drop down into the belly, but oftentimes it settles into the chest, and sometimes it can feel a bit like grief, but it's even heavier than grief. And guilt, when it's unproductive, because there can be a time and a place for experiencing transitional, productive guilt in order to lead to a full facing of something in one's life. Same with shame. There can be, if shame is moved through, there can be a momentary experience of shame that can be productive, because again, it helps us to face into something, fully face it, and then make a commitment to self or others to not do that again or to do something differently the next time. Now, if shame and guilt are not transformed, and instead they sit and linger, they do the opposite of what they can do in health. In health, they can help us face into things. In pathology, they actually feed the mechanisms of denial, keeping us from facing into things, keeping us from facing in, fully facing. We can stay trapped in worlds of guilt and in worlds of shame and in worlds of victimization for an entire lifetime. An entire lifetime can pass in these states. And thank God and thank Spirit that we also have opportunity to do things differently. That we also have opportunity to transform. So let's look now at specifically how marjoram can interface with denial and help to transform the energies of denial. So what happens in denial and the three facets, those three stool pieces, is that there is an unnatural amount of energy that will go into the protecting and the defending of one's story around it, and also of what one doesn't want to see. So there's a kind of forceful defending of, again, one's story or what one is protecting. Now, in my experience working with people and working with creating movements and soul opening, soul passageways, I put my attention on where it is that movement wants to happen, but it's not quite able to in the body, mind, and soul. And in doing that, I've learned that it's important to match the energy, to match the energy of what's going on. It's like if you're dancing with someone, doing a partner dance, you need to match the energy of that dance move, or else it's just sort of awkward. So if your dance partner is moving forward in a very full movement, and you match it with a very demure, soft energy, it sort of closes the portal or the opportunity for graceful transition, graceful movement. And yet, if that dance move is met with a similar but slightly different move, then that portal for gracious flow is opened quite beautifully. And so it's also true when we're working with energetics and we're working with oils. And so when there's something that's denied and it's feeling like, you know, there's a sense that someone is ready for this to come to the surface, that there's enough integration within their being to be able to face whatever it is that's been denied. And then I feel that unnatural force that surrounds each of the prongs, that's surrounding them in a defensiveness, the energy of defensiveness. And it may be subtle, and it may not be subtle, it may be all up in your face. Either way, if you're feeling that energy, then you can match that energy of defensiveness and resistance and even conflict with the energy of marjoram. And let's just contrast this to, say I was feeling this defensiveness and this maladaptive protective energy in someone or in myself, and I decided to meet it with jasmine. It is possible that jasmine could kind of scoop up that flow of energy and guide it in a very soft way into the unfolding of jasmine's beautiful energy. But I will say from much experience that that energy of defensiveness and maladaptive guarding is much more likely to respond to something that matches its vibration, that matches its bigness, that matches its fierceness, if you will. They kind of meet face to face, like, you know, marjoram has this very, what's the word? Bravado. It's courageous. It's in your face a bit, you know? It's not necessarily soft. And so that energy can meet the energy of, again, the defensiveness, the maladaptive safeguarding. And from there, it then guides it very gently and very beautifully into movement, true, genuine movement. So it's coming out of stasis. It's guiding the energy out of stasis. And then from there, as the energy shifts, you match the next unfolding with energy with an appropriate energy of an oil. And then you can see all of the facets of the energetic facets of denial unfolding and unwinding in the body mind right before your eyes. Again, within yourself or within another, and it's quite extraordinary. And the thing, you know, with defensiveness and denial, because they go hand in hand, is that we just often don't know that we are, that we have it going on. Oftentimes we don't know that we have the denial going on until we find that we're defensive about something. And then depending on our level of awareness, we might go, oh, well, that was an interesting reaction or a trigger or a defensive reactionary inflammatory reaction. And then that should be a little bit of an indicator that there's perhaps something underneath the surface there that we are guarding, safeguarding. And perhaps underneath that, we can see some of these dynamics of denial at work. And then we can invite in the medicine of marjoram to soften the resistance through relaxing what's on either side of the resistance, allowing in flow, which allows grace to be guided in to the body, to the mind, to the soma, to the psyche. And this allows us to be in, both be in and contribute to the creation of a world with less and less conflict, with less and less resistance. And this does not equate a world without boundaries. Boundaries are very important. But there is such a thing as unproductive resistance, and marjoram is very helpful for that. Okay, I hope that you found this helpful and that you've perhaps thought of maybe areas in your own life or perhaps someone else that might be benefited by this medicine.